we're continuing our coronavirus coverage with a new question today. What is our individual responsibility in this pandemic? And what is the common good? It's important because Governor Charlie Baker says that Massachusetts can expect to see a surge in coronavirus cases between April 7th and 17th, so as early as a week from now. That makes it urgent to think about our responsibilities to each other in this crisis, especially when social distancing is at the heart of our strategy for handling it. Also, medical providers will have to make hard decisions for patients and their families, and we'll have to take the pain in order to protect each other. But what is the common good, and how do we make sense of what we need to do to contribute to it? With us via Skype to talk about that is Harvard political philosopher and professor Michael Sandel. Welcome.
Thank you, Tiziana.
And we invite you to pull up a chair. What do you think is our individual responsibility in this pandemic? How do we decide that? And what's the common good we all are should be working towards? Also, does that change in your mind depend on what's at stake for you or your family or your loved ones? Call us. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or tweet us at Radio Boston. Michael Sandel, I think I just want to start by asking you to define what is the common good. What does that even mean?
It means thinking through together what we owe one another as citizens. It means sharing the benefits and burdens of the common life. And often we debate the common good. It's at the heart of democracy, competing conceptions of the common good. But in case of a crisis or a pandemic like this one, questions of the common good become more urgent than they are in everyday life and everyday politics.
So that raises a question, and I can't think of any way to say it that doesn't make me sound much more obstreperous than I mean to, so I apologize, but who says we owe each other anything?
Well, the answer to that question, and it's a good obstreperous question. The answer comes from a democratic debate. There is no single answer that can be handed down from on high to that question. The common good is contestable, but we see it even in the current crisis. We hear two slogans. We become very familiar, as you just mentioned, with social distancing. And we've also heard a lot of invocations of the slogan, we are all in this together. You know, we've heard this from politicians, we've heard it from advertisers. But if you think about it, social distancing, keeping apart, and we're all in this together, hanging together, morally, these point in two different directions toward two different conceptions of the common good. And I think what makes our current situation so difficult and challenging is that the crisis came upon us, this pandemic, at a time when we were not only logistically unprepared, but morally unprepared, because it's against the background, after all, of intense inequality and partisan rancor. So it's a serious question whether we'll be able to share the sacrifice and get through this together.
All right. I'd like to take our first call, Michael Sandel. The number for you to call in and join this conversation, talk about what you think we do and don't owe each other and what claims your neighbors in your community can make on you now, is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got John on the line from Cambridge. John, you are on with Michael Sandel.
Yes. Hi. Thank you, Professor Sandel. I have a conundrum for you. In a typical week, my nonverbal 8-year-old son with autism gets 40 hours of instruction from his private day school for special education. He receives an additional 20 hours of therapy in our home from a behavior technician who is affiliated with one of the autism support centers in the Commonwealth. Those 60 hours are now zero. And I understand why my son's school has suspended instruction. Schools are, I guess, what is now called congregate settings. But I'm wondering on what basis my son's home therapy should be permitted to be suspended. You know, his developmental pediatrician has deemed home behavior therapy as medically necessary, The governor has designated behavior therapy in the home as an essential service. Disruption of the service leads to regression, and regression for some of these children, as you probably know, can take the form of self-injury or injury to others in the home. I'm aware of the risk. Social distancing isn't an option. For children with autism, social distancing is the problem in the first place.
Right.
So at the same time, the risk of contracting the virus seems evenly distributed between the members of the family home and the therapist who enters it. So I'm wondering if you think the behavior therapists owe it to my son to show up.
Thank you for that question, John. And Michael Sandel, I'm going to turn to you. That is a hard one, and I imagine there are a lot of people in similar types of situations struggling with similar questions.
Right. It is a hard one, and it brings out the way in which we depend on one another. Those of us with special needs or with children, family members with special needs, and the range of those special needs is quite broad. And when those who provide health services or educational services are suddenly put at risk by human contact, the choices are truly wrenching. I don't have a good, satisfactory answer to John's question, but I think it's worth reflecting on because it highlights the way in which the question of shared sacrifice in the contributions that we make to the common good are so poignantly highlighted by the pandemic we face.
So Michael Sandel, I promise he didn't actually call, but President Donald Trump has actually presented us with another kind of either or that illustrates this common good dilemma. I want to play some sound from him last week talking about what was then his desire to reopen the economy early in the Easter timeframe.
America will again and soon be open for business, very soon, a lot sooner than 3 or 4 months that somebody was suggesting. A lot sooner. We cannot let the cure be worse than the problem itself. We're not going to let the cure be worse than the problem.
It is a legitimate thing to say that there are times when a cure can be worse than the problem, and that's something that has to be considered. Given how you understand the common good, and I do want to note, I asked you earlier who says we owe each other anything, but the concept of the common good is actually in the preamble to the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. How do you parse out what the president was saying, and how do you balance these economic risk arguments with public health risk arguments? Because, boy, that seems to be something that states, localities, and the country itself really is wrestling with every day.
Everyone is struggling. It's true. Businesses and also workers. When President Trump says open for business, that could be taken in a number of ways. It could be taken broadly as getting everyone back to work, or it could mean enabling the stock market to recover and enabling business as usual to continue. Part of the difficulty is that sending people back to work prematurely and before the danger has receded would essentially be conscripting or inviting workers to risk their health and their lives for the sake of ginning up the economy and the stock market. And I think that would be a callous response. He's fortunately backed off that initial statement. But one way we might try to strike a balance that is more sensitive to the common good than simply saying we're open for business again would be to say during the period of heightened risk, let's say over the next 18 months, when it's safe to send workers back to work, let's do an experiment and provide for 18 months universal health care for those who fall ill and paid sick leave for all workers who may contract the virus going back to work. Let's try that just for 18 months as an expression of the sense of shared sacrifice. And maybe under those conditions, I think people would be would take more seriously the idea of restoring the economy, but only when the risk recedes sufficiently for it to be responsible.
So to understand, there are actual public policy steps you think we could take that would change the equation on the cure and the disease and this choice between shutting down the economy with the harm that it causes and not shutting down the economy with the public health harm that it causes.
Exactly. It's not black or white. And what counts as opening up for business, opening up the economy, is open to competing interpretations. And I think this should be an occasion for us to reflect on what we mean by the economy, taken together with the kinds of protections for workers, the sharing of benefits and burdens that we have not seen during this period of market-driven globalization, where we've really defined the common good largely in terms of market outcomes. And I think we're in a period when we should reflect on that way of thinking about the economy and the common good.
I'd like to get another call in, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Tom from Bristol, New Hampshire, you're on the line with Michael Sandel.
Hi, Tiziana. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
It's good
Hi.
To hear you talk. In my faith community, this time of year before Easter, Lent, we have a practice of sacrifice for the common good for our community and for our families. And this year, we're committing more to our neighbors. We're calling shut-ins and asking if they need pickups at the grocery store. And personally, I have taken two grocery carts, and I take what I need for myself in the next couple of weeks and not try to hoard commit to the community. But also, I fill up the second grocery cart with things for the food banks, because with more and more people out of work and needing help, the food banks are in dire need of support. So that's my contribution and my sacrifice. And it really feels good, and I feel like I'm doing something to help.
Tom, thank you for that. And Michael Sandel, Tom is taking us down to brass tacks. We've been talking philosophy to some extent, but he's talking about don't hoard and feed your neighbor. So at
right.
a very practical level, how do we act on a sense of solidarity or common good right now?
Well, I'm very struck by what Tom says, and he says that it's informed by faith, and also, as I hear him, by a sense of community. I think being especially attentive to people who may be lonely, who don't have families to look after them, people who are self-isolating out of, concern. We've all been told to self-isolate. Some suffer the loneliness more deeply than others because they may have fewer people calling on them. I think that's another important part of the response. What Tom brings to our attention is that giving expression to the common good and sharing the sacrifice is something that we need to think about as individuals, as neighbors, as friends, and also as citizens in thinking about how, as a society, we should confront this pandemic with a sense of what we owe one another as fellow citizens.
I want to raise another painful question here. We have been hearing, both nationally but now here in the Commonwealth as well, discussions about the difficult decisions that healthcare providers may have to make should we find ourselves in a situation where the cases overwhelm the healthcare system, where, for example, we have more people who need ventilators than we have ventilators. It's hard to talk about, but again, at a very practical level, what guidance does this framework of the common good offer us in how we think about an overwhelmed healthcare system and what we're going to do if we're in that place?
Well, this is a wrenching moral question that sadly our hospitals and healthcare providers may very well be facing soon. And I don't have a fixed formula for an answer, but I would say there are several possible principles. One principle would be chance, first come, first serve. or even for that matter, a lottery. For example, if there are more people in need of ventilators than there are ventilators to go around. A second principle would be chance of survival. Who among the people who need them are most likely, if they get a ventilator, to recover and to have to be able to survive over a period of time. Now, age comes into that, but age is not the only factor in survival. And then there's the question whether those who are at the front lines of helping the community contend with this crisis should have any special consideration. For example, should doctors and nurses and first responders be put to the head of the line? So these are really, and I suppose as a political philosopher, I'm more inclined to frame questions than to offer definitive answers. But these are three possible principles that we at least should debate and think about as we anticipate these truly wrenching choices.
So we have about 60 seconds left. And in that time, I want to ask you, you said you're better at framing questions than answers, but do you have any guidance for the answers on those three possible routes you just described, or those three possible framings for these difficult questions?
I think in human terms, it's hard to ignore the question of who will be able to survive if provided scarce medical care, say through a ventilator. And that may or may not correlate with age, but I do think that has to be taken into account. I also think it may be important to try to separate the decision-making about those principles from the people who are actually giving the care, because I think it imposes a really crushing burden on those heroes who are providing the care to ask them at the same time to be the ones bearing the moral burden of these choices.
Boy, that does sound right. Harvard political philosopher and Professor Michael Sandel, I appreciate you joining us today.
My pleasure.